Chapter 3. The Manipulation of Newspapers. As if we haven't seen enough proof already, there really is a subliminal seduction going on with the mass media that is mesmerizing the minds of the masses. Just as I finished the research of the last section, the following just happened to come my way. I don't think it's by chance. Not only is it from the current time of this research, but as you will see once again, it reiterates, in very blunt terms, that subliminal seductive technology really does exist. It really is being used to manipulate us right up to this very day. Here's what it stated.
How subliminal images impact your brain and behavior. Subliminal messaging, we have all heard about it. But it doesn't really work, right? New research from the University of Texas at Houston suggests that subliminal images can change our brain activity and behavior. What does subliminal messaging entail? Subliminal messages are words or images presented below our conscious awareness. Usually, we think of short frames cut into a video feed, where the subliminal message appears so quickly, usually less than 1/10 of a second, that our minds do not register their appearance. On the other hand, supraliminal messages are presented for longer periods of time, such that we can consciously see them. So, does subliminal messaging actually affect us? There is evidence dating all the way back to the 1960s, which suggests that showing subliminal images improves behavioral performance. And recent studies show that subliminal imagery can significantly alter neural activity and behavior. This influence is probably why subliminal messaging in advertising is banned in many countries. Subliminal messages live in our everyday lives, where we may never notice them. While behavioral studies over the years have suggested subliminal messaging can modulate our choices, this new study shows how these behavioral changes occur on a single neuron and network level. Now you know subliminal messaging is not a myth. Maybe the next time you pick up your favorite drink, take a moment to ask yourself, why is this my favorite brand?
Yeah, why did you choose that one? There it is again, folks, right out in the open. Subliminal technology and usage of subliminal messages is not a conspiracy theory. We really are being bombarded with them and manipulated to this day, and for some pretty nefarious purposes, I might add. Yet, it's about to get even worse. And I say that because not only are corporations and businesses and governments and even politicians using this manipulative technology to sway our minds all over the world, but they are also using various forms of media to control our minds around the world. And they're doing that by controlling the information that we receive through various media outlets. It's not fair and balanced. It's not an open, honest and free exchange of ideas that you and I, the public, can trust as reliable and dependable information. Not even close. Rather, whether you realize it or not, the people behind our modern-day media are literally controlling the narrative of what is being broadcast. In essence, we only get what they want us to get. We only think what they want us to think. Which, by the way, is a form of mind control. And frankly, it's led to this kind of society that I'm about to show you depicted in this clip. It's from a movie called, They Live. And it's the classic scene where the lead character finds a box of special sunglasses that enables him to see what's really going on in his society. Let's take a look.
The opening clip of this movie, They Live, shows the main character with a box full of sunglasses. He is searching through this box in front of the overflowing garbage cans. This box of glasses seems to have been put out with the trash. As he searches through the box, he finds a pair and puts them in his pocket. He looks around to see if anyone noticed him and then closes the box and puts the box of glasses in the trash can and covers it with paper. As he proceeds to walk down the street, he puts the glasses on, but as he sees the ground through the glasses, he stops in amazement. Something is not right. He takes the glasses off and looks around the street. He puts the glasses back on, and the sign reads Obey. But when he takes them off again, the sign has a normal advertisement. He tries it again. He puts the glasses on and looks at the sign, and it again reads Obey. This is weird. He takes the glasses off and places his hand over his eyes. This cannot be real. He puts the glasses back on and looks at a different sign that is advertising a trip to the Caribbean, but this sign reads in bold print Marry and Reproduce. He walks a little farther down the street and comes to a men's apparel shop. Even though the sign reads the name of the store, when he puts on the glasses, the same sign reads, No Independent Thought, and a smaller sign in the window reads, Consume. Without the glasses, the same little sign read Close Out Sale. Trying to figure out what is going on, he looks down the street, puts the glasses back on, and all the signs are different. In bold print, they are telling the public work 8 hours, sleep 8 hours, play 8 hours, watch TV, buy, submit, conform, and stay asleep. He then walks past a magazine stand and again there are signs saying, watch TV and buy and stay asleep and submit and no thought. He picks up a magazine and looks inside. All the same words are in there except for one additional statement. Do not question authority. When he takes the glasses off and looks at the pages again, they are normal articles. While he is flipping through the pages, he put the glasses back on and a man steps up, to also look at the magazines. As he looks up at the man, he is shocked to see an alien being staring back at him and the alien asks, what's your problem? He realizes he is staring at this alien, so he takes the glasses off and the alien is now a normal human dressed in a nice business suit. The man in the suit repeats, I said, what's your problem? As the man walks off, he pays the clerk for the magazine and then turns back to look at the man with the glasses. Looking through the glasses, this man is now an alien again. The alien takes his change and walks to his car and leaves. In unbelief, he stands there in shock. The clerk comes over to him and says, hey buddy, you going to pay for that or what? The clerk is normal looking, but the money in his hand has printed on it, this is your God. The clerk continues, listen buddy, I don't want no hassle today. Either pay for it or put it back. He puts the magazine back and turns to walk away. When he walks to the corner, waiting for the light to say walk, the word sleep keeps being repeated over and over. He walks past a hair salon and looks in the window. There are four or five ladies sitting under dryers, but when he puts the glasses back on, one of them is an alien. The other ladies do not even realize that they are talking to an alien. There is a lady loading her car and talking to two other ladies about a Lamaze class, but as he puts the glasses on, he sees that the lady talking about the class is also an alien. His legs can hardly hold him up as he walks into a little grocery store. Half of the people in the store are aliens. He takes a deep breath as he passes a human man talking about his feelings to an alien being. Then the TV comes on and the newscaster speaking is also an alien. Behind him is the word, in large, bold print, obey. The newscaster is saying, we have faith in our leaders, we are optimistic to what comes of it all. It really boils down to our ability.
Can you imagine living in the world like that? Where everybody was being subliminally manipulated behind the scenes through the media. And no one had any clue that they were subliminally being told to obey, never question anything, consume, marry, reproduce, and go back to sleep. Can you imagine what a sick reality that would be? I mean, good thing it was just a movie. Unfortunately, that really is the world we live in right now. And this documentary, whether you realize it or not, are the glasses that we are trying to get you to put on so you can see what is really going on behind the scenes, just like that guy. In fact, just like in that movie, there really are a cadre of people around the world who are responsible for creating this subliminally controlled society. Only they are not aliens, but rich elites, who do get all the good high-paying jobs and positions, and of course, they get to enjoy the lavish lifestyles, while the rest of us slumber around. And these elites have the same goals in mind like that movie portrayed. That is, total subliminal mind control and domination of every non-elite person on the planet. I know it sounds crazy, but once you realize this, it not only starts to explain why our society is in the shape it's in, but it also starts to reveal yet another sign from the Bible that we are living in the last days. Let's take a look at that one.
2 Peter 3:3-7. Above all, you must understand that in the last days scoffers will come, scoffing, and following their own evil desires. They will say, where is this coming he promised? Ever since our ancestors died, everything goes on as it has since the beginning of creation. But they deliberately forget that long ago by God's word the heavens came into being and the earth was formed out of water and by water. By these waters also the world of that time was deluged and destroyed. By the same word, the present heavens and earth are reserved for fire, being kept for the day of judgment and destruction of the ungodly.
So here we see the Bible gives another sign that we are living in the last days. It not only says that we would see a rise of wickedness like never before, but also like we saw in the first sign earlier. But now, here we see there would also be a rise in the scoffing toward the things of God like never before. And this scoffing is specifically towards the truths of God. Including the fact that God really did judge this planet once with a global flood because of the previous rise of wickedness. And now it says he's going to do it again, because of another future rise of wickedness. The first time it was with water, the second time will be by fire. These truths are what the last day society will be scoffing about. But hey, good thing we don't see any signs of our world scoffing at the truths of God today, including His next coming judgment. Yeah, right. We're living in a world where scoffing at God, the Bible, Jesus, and soon coming return, are at an all-time high. Here's my point. How did this happen? And in such a short amount of time? Well, believe it or not, it's due to the rise of this manipulative subliminal technology that we're being subjected to all across the planet via the media. The timing of its manipulative arrival is not by chance. It's just in time to fulfill yet another Bible prophecy sign that we're living in the last days. You see, as I mentioned at the beginning, this subliminal manipulative technology is being used not only to sway our minds with subliminal messaging that tells our subconscious what to buy and consume just like in that movie, but it is also being used to control or instruct our minds to go back to sleep, to not question authority, to obey whatever they, the elites, say, including, believe it or not, scoffing at the things of God. So, let's keep our glasses on and let's see in this next chapter how the mass media system, that's built and owned not by aliens but rich elites, really are controlling the narrative so they can subliminally control and instruct our minds with only the information they want us to get. The first way the global media is controlling the narrative to control our minds is with newspapers. You see, for the longest time, when it came to sharing information, mankind was severely limited, let alone having any real ability to become a global information-sharing society like we are today. For many centuries, if a person wanted to share information, it was not only local, but they would also use the tedious method of cuneiform tablets, which is a communication method of slowly pressing shapes into clay tablets. Still others would use other primitive methods like writing on reed parchments or animal skins, or even broken pieces of pottery to get their message across. Century after century, this was about the extent of man's communication methods. Until now. All of a sudden, not that long ago, a serious breakthrough occurred. It was called the Gutenberg Press, and it radically changed, overnight, the means of which, the method and the rapidity of information sharing, as this video shows. James Meggs, Editor-in-Chief, Popular Mechanics. Everybody knows the story of Gutenberg and his printing press. Nevertheless, it is one of the greatest stories in the history of inventions. The ability to produce books is severely limited because to produce a book, a person must sit with one book and painstakingly copy it into a second version. They were fantastically expensive, they took a long time to make, and these limiting factors kept them from being distributed to people. Narrator number 2. Gutenberg saw an opportunity. He knew it was possible to print in a new way that it would make it less expensive. He saw it as a tremendous money-making opportunity. Professor S. James Gates, Jr. of the University of Maryland. Gutenberg had the idea of removable type. James Meggs. Removable type where he didn't have to make new ones for each page. You just had to rearrange the letters on the pages that you want. Narrator number 2. Once movable type came into play and the production costs went down, knowledge flourished. The ability to have access to this world of knowledge was absolutely transformational for Europe. James Meggs. The notion of pressing blocks against paper to make images or text did really come from China, but no one ever turned it into a manufacturing process. That was the difference. He could make thousands of them, quickly and efficiently. He started to see the end of the artisan era and the beginning of the manufacturing era. If you think about the impact that had, it's really hard to underestimate it. Professor S. James Gates, Jr., University of Maryland. Knowledge up to that point was the property of only a small number of people, rather it be royalty or a religious order. In other words, back then there were elites controlling the information people received, but with the invention of Gutenberg's press, it was wrenched from their hands, for a time anyway. Because as we will soon see, these elites have not only grabbed that informational control back, but they have done it on a massive global level this time. But as you can see, with the invention of the Gutenberg press, information sharing went from the slow handwritten artisan method, to the fast-paced manufacturing method. Now we could crank out information like never before. And it wasn't just books either. Gutenberg's press also gave rise to many informational books or what we call, newspapers. With these new forms of media, people could now find out the news of what was going on in their local world in a very inexpensive way and on an industrial scale. Soon the first weekly printed newspaper appeared in Europe in 1605 called, The Relation, and from there it took off like wildfire. Soon it hopped the pond to America with America's first daily newspaper in 1784. And then, one of the early American newspapers was called the Public Occurrences, both foreign and domestic. So, as you can see, from early on, The trend of this new information-sharing technology called newspapers was not only communicating local information to people, but global events as well. It was a huge breakthrough, especially if your goal was to manipulate the minds of the masses by controlling the narrative of information that people receive. And of course, as we will soon see, that is exactly what's going on with newspapers today, literally, all over the planet. But this is why today we have an estimated 18,000 newspapers in circulation in about 102 countries, all available right now at our fingertips, anytime, instantly, connecting all of us, thanks to another invention called the internet. Lord willing, we will get to that information technology in one of our final sections. But when it comes to newspapers, the top 10 global newspapers right now are
The New York Times, US. The Guardian, Great Britain. The Washington Post, US. The Daily Mail, Great Britain. Compass, Indonesia. Liberty Times, Taiwan. USA Today, US. The Wall Street Journal, US. The Daily Telegraph, Great Britain. And China Daily, China.
In fact, let's take a look at the massive global scale this largest of all global newspapers operate on. When it comes to the New York Times, it is light years ahead of the Gutenberg Press. Look at this video transcription.
The Insider reports. This 10-mile-long roll of newsprint paper alone will soon turn into 30,000 copies of the New York Times, that will be on the newsstands and doorsteps of thousands of people in about 5 hours. It is 10 p.m. at the College Point neighborhood in Queens, New York, and the shift has just started for the workers at this printing plant, who will meticulously work to the early morning until 3 a.m., to print one of the most respected journalistic publications in the world. That paper you read in the morning, over your cup of coffee, probably will have come from one of these 27 different printing plants, passed through hundreds of hands, and then inspected by thousands of pairs of eyes before landing in your hands. We visited this 300,000-square-foot printing facility in Queens to find out all that goes into this process.
Mike Connors, Managing Director of Production Department. Getting the paper out is an equation. We are graded every day on our arrival time. We have 52 trucks that go out most nights. If they are on time, we get a 100%, if they are late, it decrements from there. We are measured every morning on how our arrival times are.
First, a digital copy of the newspaper is sent to the printing plant. This paper is the final version where the editors, writers, and the copy editors sign off on to be printed. From there, each page of the newspaper is digitally transferred to a plate using a laser machine. A plate is a sheet of aluminum that contains the image of the newspaper page on it. Each plate is equivalent to a single page of the newspaper. The plates are made in a room made with special yellow lighting to help protect the plate's unit page from exposure. This is what will eventually transfer onto paper. But we will get to more of that later. Plates that are ready to go to printing are stored in groupings based on the section they will be in the actual newspaper.
This is the Sunday arts or drama, as we call it in our world. He tells us as he points to the different pages ready to go to printing.
This helps keep the plates organized and lets everyone know where each plate belongs in the printing stage. While the printing of the plates is taking place, giant rolls of paper are being transported by clamped trucks which help the rolls move around. These rolls of newsprint are stacked and stored in a large warehouse. Each roll is 10 miles long and makes 30,000 newspapers. When the rolls are ready to be used, the outside paper is removed by hand. The paper is now ready to be brought over to the press machines. But before the printing happens, the damaged parts of the paper roll must be removed. Wrinkled or damaged paper cannot be used for printing, so that portion of the roll is recycled. Now this is where the true magic happens. The printing of the paper. The plates are individually put into the press cylinder by hand. They are purposefully connected to one another, so they print in the direction the newspaper reads. And of course, there would be no newspaper without the ink. To print that many newspapers in a single night, massive amounts of ink are stored in containers and transported to each printing press through metal pipes. As the cylinders begin turning,
ink gets splashed onto the muted image on the plates, and then that image gets transferred to a sheet of printing paper, creating the physical copy of the newspaper. Although the process needs to be quick and efficient, the printing plant doesn't sacrifice quality. It's about 3 a.m. at this point of the process. The paper is checked as it comes down the assembly line. Employees will look at the alignment of the paper and the coloring, making sure all the imagery has transferred correctly. A large ruler, that can accommodate the dimensions of the paper, is used to check the positioning of the columns of each page. Once the papers are ready to go, they are wrapped up and shipped out to be placed on the doorstep of their readers by early morning. Although the Times is printed across the country, the Queen's printing plant produces nearly 41% of the publication's daily papers. Although almost 80,000 copies of the paper are printed every hour, timing is everything.
Yeah, I would say so. Gutenberg, eat your heart out. What a long way it has come from the 1400s. Now they are cranking out newspapers with all kinds of information for people to digest, local to global, and that's just one out of 18,000 of these kinds of operations going on all over the world, every day. Here is the assumption with it all. Gee, I sure hope these rich elite owners of these newspapers are being open and honest and fair with all this information we are digesting from them. I mean, surely these elites wouldn't use these now global forms of media information sharing to subliminally manipulate the minds of the masses in order to create a desired outcome for their own nefarious purposes, would they? Oh, how I wish I could say no to that, but then I would be lying like these rich elitists are. Folks, I'm here to tell you, and as you will see in a moment, the usage of newspapers to subliminally manipulate the minds of the masses for some elitist nefarious purposes has been going on for quite some time. In fact, one doesn't have to look very far back in history for the obvious proof. It is now a well-established fact that one of these rich elitists who used his newspaper for his own nefarious purposes was a man named William Randolph Hearst. And it is an historical fact that he clearly used all the newspapers he purchased and amassed to manipulate people, even here in the United States, on a massive scale for his chosen desired outcome.
Narrator: Hearst traces its origins to March 4, 1887, when 23-year-old William Randolph Hearst placed his name on the masthead of the San Francisco Examiner with the title of proprietor. The Examiner had been owned by William's father, George Hearst, a California rancher and miner whose interests tended to lean more towards politics than newspapers. After George Hearst was elected as a U.S. Senator in 1886, he turned the newspaper over to his son. The younger Hearst assumed the responsibilities as both editor and publisher and quickly transformed the State Examiner into what he called the monarch of the dailies. He bought the most advanced printing equipment of the day. He dramatically redesigned the newspaper's look and hired the best journalists he could find, example, Jack London and Mark Twain. Within a few years, the New Examiner was a runaway success and would point to a new era of American journalism. Hearst purchased a second newspaper from the East Coast, the New York Journal, in 1895. Soon he would start newspapers in Chicago, Los Angeles, and Boston. Hearst's newspapers pioneered innovations such as multiple colored presses, wire syndication, and the first color comic sections. By the 1920s, Hearst had 28 newspapers nationwide read by one out of every four Americans.
Wow. One man, a rich elite, was responsible for feeding information to one quarter of the whole United States by simply buying up a whole bunch of newspapers. Good thing that's not going on today. Yeah, right. We will see it as being done on a massive global scale in just a minute. But think about the power that this one rich elite had over the minds of the masses. Surely, he reported the news in all his newspapers around the country in an open, honest, and fair manner. He wouldn't use them to manipulate people for his own nefarious purposes, would he? Unfortunately, the answer is yes, and this is yet another well-documented historical fact. William Randolph Hearst used all his newspapers to manipulate the minds of the masses by controlling the narrative in those newspapers, to get a desired outcome, his outcome from the people. For instance, it is now known that Hearst used his newspapers to whip up popular support for U.S. military adventurism in Cuba, Puerto Rico, and the Philippines. He also used his newspapers to distort world events and deliberately try to discredit his critics. And it is even reported that Hearst's papers accepted payments from abroad to slant the news. So much for being open, honest and fair with journalism in newspapers. In fact, they even gave a term for the manipulative tactics Hearst used in his newspapers. It's called yellow journalism. And as you will soon see, it still continues to this day. This is how powerful a manipulative tool newspapers have become.
Paperboy. Read all about it. Narrator. In 1898, William Randolph Hearst and Joseph Pulitzer were fighting a circulation battle on the streets of New York. Hearst decided he was going to scoop Pulitzer by reporting on the escalation of the Cuban War for Independence, and he was going to do it with style. He staged for a daring rescue of Evangelina Cisneros, a popular Cuban prisoner. Hearst then delighted the public with a sizzling story of her escape. Her rescue, however, wasn't the only thing that Hearst had staged. The war in Cuba was little more than bar fights and minor skirmishes. Hearst ordered his reporters to exaggerate the severity of the conflict to make it more interesting. I guess boring reality sells fewer papers.
Because these early escapades were printed with yellow ink, an innovation at the time, this attention-grabbing and deceptive reporting was given the name yellow journalism, a term still used today to describe tabloid trash and dishonest journalism.
Even documentaries have a sordid history. In 1922, filmmaker Robert Flaherty made a feature-length documentary called Nanook of the North. In it, he chronicled the struggles of an Inuit family as they tried to survive the harsh Arctic environment. Here they are building an igloo to keep safe from the bitter winds. And here they are listening to a record for the first time. Hey, don't eat that. One of them is seen putting the record into their mouth. Again, there was just one problem. It was all staged.
In fact, the family shown in Nanook of the North owned their very own gramophone player, regularly enjoyed listening to music on it. But according to Flaherty, showing the family as backwards and primitive told a much more interesting story, and would sell more tickets at the box office.
Today the media relies on sensationalism more than ever.
While newscasters like Dan Rather and Brian Williams have been fired for telling outright lies, others have found success while focusing on tantalizing news stories over ones with substance. It seems like we are living in an age where it is becoming increasingly difficult to find useful and reliable news.
In other words, the stuff that Hearst did with his newspapers way back in his day is still going on today, on an even more massive scale. Yellow journalism, or the new modern term for this old-fashioned historical manipulative practice, fake news is everywhere. Rich elitists really are using newspapers, still to this day, to manipulate the minds of the masses to generate their own desired outcome, including in the area of politics. Believe it or not, with newspapers, they want to make sure that you only vote for who they want you to vote for. Why? Because their pre-chosen candidates will allow these same elitists to maintain their power. Remember, it was politics that Hearst's dad was really interested in. He was the one who originally gave William Randolph Hearst his first newspaper back in his day in San Francisco. In fact, for those of you who might find this hard to believe, here is just a small sample of proof that this political manipulation with newspapers is still going on today.
Fox News reports. Now we have it over on the big board, coverage is 92% negative, negative coverage of Trump administration by ABC, CBS, NBC Nightly News, so perhaps that does shade the manner in which some of the mainstream networks do cover this administration and politics in general.
The thing that got the most coverage was actually the Russian investigation, which if you look at the polling, the people care about the least.
According to the Media Research Center, between June and September, the Russian collusion investigation on the networks had 342 minutes and immigration close to 300 as well. But the administration's economic achievements got 14 minutes. Not much.
No, not much at all. The things that affect the lives of millions and millions of people, and it deserves a lot more scrutiny.
Absolutely, and it deserves more publicity so people will know what is going on.
Yeah, what a concept, that the news would actually report the truth and true events instead of fictitious biased narratives like what Hearst did with his newspapers in order to control the narrative and manipulate people. In fact, people in the news industry today admit that these elitists really are using their news outlets to control what people believe in order to generate their own desired outcome. Matthew Gensko, Richard O. Ryan Professor of Economics and Neuhauer Family Faculty Fellow. What drives the choice of slant by media? You can think of two very different narratives. 1. The slant is driven by the political preferences of the owners of the news outlets, maybe by the editors or reporters. The other slant is chosen just to maximize profits and therefore is driven by whatever the readers of the newspaper want to hear. So there is a correlation out there that everybody can see, and I think it is one of these cases that people get a little mixed up between correlation and causation, and we show that causation is ultimately coming from the economic side. But in fact, you see that most conservative things are run by mostly conservatives, and liberal things are run mostly by liberals. In other words, whoever owns that newspaper, and whatever mindset they have, they are going to push that mindset onto other people, whether they realize it or not. It's not an open, honest and fair market of information sharing like you would think. It's clearly slanted and biased in order to get people to think what these rich elitists want you to think, just like Hearst did back in his day with politics. Which is why one person stated this.
There was a time when the media, at least, made an attempt to be fair to both sides in the political debate. Sadly, that time is now dead and gone. And it shows in the contempt many Americans now have for the media. Even so, don't shed a tear for the media's seriously tarnished reputation, they've brought it on themselves.
Sure enough, just like Hearst, these aliens, I mean, small group of elitists have actually purchased up virtually all newspapers around the world and are now using them right now to control the narrative not only in the United States, but literally across all developed countries to manipulate the minds of the masses as well on a global scale. Check out the proof for yourself.
Billionaires love buying newspapers, even though the industry is struggling. Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff is buying Time magazine for $190 million. Benioff and his wife Lynn say it is a family investment, calling themselves caretakers. Biotech billionaire Patrick Soon-Shiong bought the LA Times for $500 million in 2018. Soon-Shiong. His goal is to preserve integrity of the LA Times. I believe there has to be a trusted news source, someone you could go to that is fairly impartial, that really wants to report the news. In 2013, Amazon founder and CEO Jeff Bezos bought the Washington Post for $250 million. Bezos says buying the paper was a business endeavor, not philanthropy. The company made a profit in 2016 and 2017. Jeff Bezos. I think a lot of us believe that democracy dies in darkness, that certain institutions have a very important role in making sure that there is light, and I think the Washington Post has a seat, an important seat because we have to be located here in the capital city of the United States of America. Red Sox owner John Henry paid $70 million for the Boston Globe in 2013. John Henry, Red Sox owner. I invested in the Globe because I believe deeply in the future of this great community, and the Globe should play a vital role in determining that future. Casino magnate Sheldon Adelson secretly bought the Las Vegas Review-Journal in 2015. Former reporters and editors say he's tried to exert control over stories. But Adelson denies meddling in the editorial process. Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway owns more than 30 local papers. Warren Buffett.
I still love newspapers. I'm very glad we own them.
Yeah, I bet you are. But don't worry. As the one billionaire stated, we're only doing this so we can create a trusted news source that's fair and balanced. Yeah, sure you are. We know differently. Reports are now coming out that 15 billionaires own America's news media companies. And it's sparking a conversation about the ultra-wealthy's role in controlling the news. That's their words, not mine. They even go on to question if this trend is a new way of using money to influence the media, and that billionaires have long exerted influence on the news simply by owning U.S. media outlets. You know, like what Hearst did. Nothing new, folks. No need to reinvent the wheel here. It worked in the past for William Randolph Hearst, why not use it on people today? And they are. But as you can see, it really is a small group of aliens, I mean elitists, who are buying up newspapers across the United States in order to control the narrative to manipulate the minds of the masses for their own nefarious purposes. I'm not making this up. And it is not just the US billionaires doing this, it's billionaires around the world also buying up newspapers in other countries as well.
Aaron Bostoni. Billionaires control the media, and it is undermining democracy. Newscaster at Papers. This is a great set of papers, I've had such fun out there reading those. Anyone who thinks politics are boring would have their mind changed by these papers. Aaron Bostoni. The Sun, Times, Daily Mail, Metro and Telegraph are all owned by individuals who are incredibly wealthy and don't even pay taxes in the UK. There's Rupert Murdoch, who founded News Corp, whose UK arm, News UK, owns the Sun and Times stables. He lives in the US where he is a citizen. There's Viscount Rothermere with the Daily Mail, Mail on Sunday, and Metro. He lives in France and is a non-dom. And there are the Barclay brother with the Telegraph and Sunday Telegraph, not to mention the Spectator, twins so cartoonishly bad they have a secret lair in the Channel Islands. Murdoch leads the pack in wealth and is worth around $20 billion. The Barclay brothers are worth £8 billion, while the fourth Viscount Rothermere is worth a comparatively measly £1 billion. Rothermere, like his father before him, is based in France with his business interests operating through a complex arrangement of offshore holdings and trusts. The Barclay brothers operate not just from their private island but also Monaco. Like Rothermere, they too are non-doms, although they claim that is for health reasons. Ever thought about maybe just trying a gym membership? All of these individuals use their papers to ensure their vested interests as a wealthy elite are best served. For example, ensuring any potential government is committed not only to lower taxes for the rich but also isn't serious about tax avoidance. What is more, they lobby for privatization and outsourcing to always be preferred, no matter the cost or the catalogue of failure. Why? Because both act as a machine to take money from ordinary people and give it to the rich. So, every time you walk past the newspaper stand in the supermarket or at the petrol station, remember it is this handful of billionaires whose opinions you are staring at. It's like that stupid Facebook post your uncle sometimes makes, except rather than ignoring it once a month, you have to see it everywhere, every day. All these media barons have backed the Tories in recent elections not only through endorsements from their papers but personally. Rothermere favoured Cameron and knew him, while Murdoch entered 10 Downing Street literally through the back door following the 2010 election when David Cameron wished to thank him for his support. BBC reports. Why did you enter the back door at number 10 when you visited the Prime Minister following the last general election? Murdoch. Because I was asked to. Aaron Bostany. More than just supporting the Tories in the past, the Barclay brothers have even donated them money. Guys, it is not supposed to be that obvious. Now we are supposed to believe that these moneybags do not interfere in what their papers say, but they do. Harold Evans, a former editor at the Sunday Times, spoke of how he was often rebuked for not doing what he, Murdoch, wants in political terms and how the two almost had fisticuffs after he published an article by the economist James Tobin which Murdoch disagreed with. David Yelland, former editor at The Sun, made a similar admission but went even further, saying most Murdoch editors wake up in the morning, switch on the radio, hear that something has happened and think, what would Rupert think about this? You look at the world through Rupert's eyes. Now they don't own these papers out of the goodness of their hearts. These are ultra-wealthy, powerful individuals who own newspapers, which often make no money, because they want to influence political outcomes in a decisive way. This is one of the most insidious ways of undermining democratic politics.
As well as manipulating people by controlling the narrative via the newspapers for your own desired outcome. This is going on all over the world, whether you realize it or not. In fact, the terms they use to describe this global manipulation trend by these billionaire elites are concentration of media ownership, media consolidation, media convergence, or even media oligopoly. They all describe it as the process whereby progressively fewer individuals control increasing shares of the mass media, and that this media ownership is generally something very close to the complete state control over information in direct or indirect ways. That is about as blunt as you can get, folks. Their words, not mine. In fact, these aliens, I mean small group of billionaire elites, are not only buying up the newspapers around the world to control what people around the world think about politics, but just like the Bible said would happen in the last days, they are also using these same global newspapers to control people's attitude towards the things of God around the world as well. And wonder of wonder, it is turning them into a bunch of scoffers as well. Let's take a look at a small sampling of that proof as well.
Anti-Christian media bias is real. I've done considerable work as a sociologist documenting anti-Christian bias in academia. there is plenty to be found. It seemed unlikely, the academic world would be the only place such bias would arise, so I followed that up with research on the media and Christianity. These findings show that many in the media are closed to the idea that Christians can face unfair hatred. However, conservative Christians face animosity in the United States that is just as high as Muslims face, but the media still dismisses anti-Christian hatred. My prior research shows that liberals and secular individuals are more likely to have anti-Christian hatred than others. Of course, it's well known, and researched, that media personnel are relatively likely to be politically liberal and secular. That means many of our respondents may have a certain level of anti-Christian hostility. This explains much of why Christians cannot rely on the media to tell stories sympathetic to their causes. It may also explain why some media personnel argue that religious freedom is unimportant. This makes the task of Christians who deal with the media harder than those who advocate other causes. They are naturally going to write a less supportive story. Exposing the Times' anti-Christian bias. It's rare to see a major media outlet be so honest about its ideological bias. But yet there was the New York Times reporter Dan Levin on Twitter the other day, openly soliciting negative stories about Christian schools. The New York Times' long history of prejudicial coverage of religious Christians should cement your skepticism about its intentions. For example, the New York Times was one of many outlets that negatively reported that Second Lady Karen Pence had recently begun teaching at a private school that adhered to the Christian doctrine of her church. Editors at The Washington Post and other large outlets incredulously wondered how Christian schools that still embrace traditional social values could even happen in contemporary American society. The British Bias Corporation. At the BBC, cultural biases are built in and nurtured. Not only are those biases tolerated, but public criticism of the media is shrugged off as uninformed. Over time, a media outlet eventually declares its own preferences and biases. It is hard not to, when you are in the business of making public declarations, and then defending them. Patterns emerge. A course is set. An analysis of coverage demystifies the interest of media decision makers and reveals prejudices, predispositions, attitudes and perspectives. Story decisions what to pursue, what to ignore, how to play the news reflect deeper issues, like the sense of responsibility surrounding the media institution itself and the people who run it. Bias against religion is itself a perspective that can manipulate culture and nurture elements that are harmful to the ideals of freedom of thought and freedom of faith. Case in point, the British Broadcasting Corporation. The BBC's consistent attacks on religious freedom are a principal example. A review of the BBC's coverage of religion overwhelmingly negative provides an interesting map on which to mark their course. The BBC has been widely criticized for its anti-Christian programming, including accusations of anti-Semitic bias in coverage of Israel and coverage that painted the church as in decline and irrelevant. In a 2011 documentary, the corporation questioned whether Christianity had a future, describing the state of the religion as in terminal decline. The public deserves better from its guardians of truth. Media biased against Christians. Why does the news media promote Islam over Christianity? Why is Islam considered a great religion rather than a pagan religion? They force people to become Muslims with the sword rather than the love of Christianity. In Saudi Arabia, the women are treated like furniture. Women cannot drive a car, and in their law can be beaten by their husbands. In Turkey in 1915, the Armenians were driven out of Turkey and slaughtered to the tune of almost 2 million people. There is a movie called 1915, where at the end, it shows naked women on crosses all the way down the road in Turkey. This is how they treated the Christian Armenians in Turkey. Turkey will not admit to this day. The news media hates Christianity and will attack anyone who supports it. CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, NBC, all these are biased against Christianity.
And again, this is happening all over the world. So, as you can see, these aliens, I mean rich elitists, are buying up all the newspapers all over the world in order to manipulate the minds of the masses to produce the behavior and political outcomes they so desire. Including, as you just saw, the desire to manipulate the attitudes of people, specifically against God and Christianity, so they will scoff at him on a global basis. This media manipulation has not only led to an increase of wickedness in people's behavior, like the Bible warned about in the coming last days society, but it has also produced a global society of scoffers towards the existence of God and his soon coming judgment. Total manipulation of the minds of the masses, across the planet, just by simply owning all forms of informational media in this one outlet called newspapers. Unfortunately, these aliens, I mean rich elitists, are not merely content with just owning all the newspapers around the world to control the minds of the masses. In their insatiable lust for power and domination, they are using another tactic that Hearst employed. That is, they are now branching out in all different kinds of media around the world and are buying them up too, in order to even more control the minds of the masses, as seen in this next video.
Hearst also branched out into the burgeoning magazine industry, launching a motor magazine in 1903. Over the next 10 years, he would acquire such legendary titles as Cosmopolitan, Good Housekeeping, and Harper's Bazaar. In 1928, Hearst Magazines built its international headquarters on 8th Avenue in New York City. In moving beyond the medium of print, Hearst soon began producing newsreels in partnership with a European film company. In 1929, Hearst formed a separate production company, Hearst Metrotone News, to produce them worldwide. Hearst moved into radio broadcasting in the 1920s, and in 1948 Hearst became the owner of one of the first television stations in the country, WBAL-TV in Baltimore. By the mid-century, Hearst had built one of the world's largest media companies. After William Randolph Hearst's death in 1951, the corporation forged ahead, continuing to diversify and expand its operations. In the 1980s, Hearst became a founding partner in cable television's Lifetime and Ondi Networks, and soon also acquired a 20% interest in ESPN. In 1997, the corporation joined the leading ranks of a group television broadcasters with the formation of Hearst Argyle Television. Hearst's magazines made news of its own in 2000 with its most successful launch in the company's history, Oh, the Oprah Magazine, a venture with the Harpo Entertainment Group. Today, Hearst continues its founder's enterprising spirit and is a leading global diversified media information and services company with more than 360 businesses. Each day at Hearst, more than 20,000 people are at work helping to inform and entertain and inspire an audience of millions worldwide.
Or should we say, manipulate an audience of millions worldwide. As you can see, these billionaire elites can't stop with just one media outlet to control the minds of the masses. Oh no. They literally are out there amassing all forms of media in order to get the job done. Including radio, which will be the topic of our next chapter. Believe it or not, radio stations and even the music they play on them are being used to control people's behavior and their minds just like the newspapers do. You cannot escape their methods of control. They are everywhere. And as we will soon see, the media of radio and music are also telling us to not think for ourselves, to obey only what they want us to obey, to never question them, and of course, to scoff specifically at the Bible, God, Jesus, and his soon coming judgment. Where have I heard that before? I know it's hard to believe, but keep those glasses on. Now let's begin this next journey exposing how this next form of media is also mesmerizing the minds of the masses.